Welcome back. Let's take a look at the latest on the coronavirus running rampant around the planet. It's certainly rampant here in the U.S. We have a lot of stories up, and we found out that today that Barron Trump was apparently found to be testing positive about the same time Melania was, maybe the same time Dad was. Melania said she was glad the family got to go through it together. They are all testing negative now. That's the latest word we have. Interesting stories, lots of them up there. The news should be up by now for the day. It's your evening newspaper, a complete wrap-up of the day. And tomorrow we'll be here soon enough. Over 30,000 health experts have now signed a declaration against any further lockdowns. They've had it with lockdowns. The White House reports one site has blocked the CDC from mandating masks for public transport. CDC wanted to recommend mandatory masks for all forms of public transport, and the White House said no. Let's see what else we have here. YouTube removing videos containing coronavirus vaccine misinformation, whatever that means. There's a lot of information out there, and I'm sure it hasn't all been vetted, so maybe they're certainly trying to do the right thing. I don't know. I can't monitor it all. Coronavirus pandemic could result in a serious setback for the global fight against tuberculosis, said the World Health Organization today. I don't know what the connection there is, but maybe Dr. Henry Nyman does. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. What's the connection there?
Oh, I would imagine it really has to do with routine types of testing that isn't being done because of the pandemic, and doctors aren't seeing, you know, all the patients that they normally would see. So people basically aren't getting routine preventative type things. So monitoring tuberculosis spread or other diseases is not going to be as efficient during the pandemic because doctors, you know, limit the amount of exposure they have with patients. And
Right.
And the numbers are starting to go up. You know, speaking of the pandemic.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before somewhere along the line, Henry. Somewhere.
Right. And notice that Vice President Pence isn't talking about second wave. He stopped that. You know, he was talking about a second wave back in June and July.
Right.
You know, everybody else in the world was talking about a second wave in the fall, which is not June or July in either the northern or southern hemisphere. And now it is the fall. The numbers are starting to go up in the U.S. The numbers are starting to go up in Europe. There is significant concern worldwide. And
you know what's going to happen here? You know very well what's going to happen. The rank and file population is going to become immediately confused when influenza breaks out. There will be very tough challenges to try to help people understand there are two different things here. They're racing along together, though, and it's going to confuse people. It just will, and that's coming.
Well, it's just going to put pressure on testing, and
right.
And if it's a significant flu season, that'll put pressure on hospital beds. And there's projections now that it's not going to be the beds, but it's going to be healthcare workers. It's going to be a shortage of healthcare workers because they're either in quarantine or
they're out for 2 weeks. Boom! If they test. So
yeah. So. So that's probably the biggest concern. And, a parallel concern is there's a lot more talk about herd immunity now, that's what the administration's real plan is. and even if he does get defeated in 3 weeks, which I think is becoming increasingly likely. He'll still be around till January. Yeah, you can get a lot of dead bodies between now and the end of January, probably 200,000 or 300,000 on a good a good projection. You know, things could be significantly worse than that. So we're probably heading for 500,000 dead without the herd immunity, and you know, several million on top of that if we are. Trump puts it both ways. You know, he did the lockdown and he saved 2 million lives because that's what would have happened if he didn't do anything. And now a new wave is coming, and usually the fall wave is worse than the Herald wave. The Herald wave is just an intro. The higher number of cases is going to be during the fall and winter. And he's talking about herd immunity, and so is Scott Atlas. And the media is talking more about herd immunity as being something that Trump is starting to advocate, although there's no support in the scientific community. I think there was some fake list of fake names on I don't know specifically what that list was of scientists that are supposed to be on board for this herd immunity, but they're not even real names. And that has raised significant concerns in the scientific community. There's actually going to be an editorial coming out tomorrow that's advocating that all of the top health scientists, Fauci and Birx and Redfield and Stephen Hahn and Brett Gerar, all resign in mass to protest the direction that the administration is taking, and going with Scott Atlas and retired radiologist with zero background in infectious diseases or public health or virology.
What about,
anything that has anything to do with the coronavirus.
Right. Okay. I had a story about excess deaths today. Did you see that one?
Yeah, what was that? No, I mean, I've looked at the official numbers. Right. What's your story say about excess deaths?
Well, it said that there were actually, they recomputed and there were, 100,000 more dead or something that they're saying were related to coronavirus. I don't know. I don't know how they reconfigured their protocols, but they did.
Now, there's no reconfiguring of protocols. I mean, this is simple math. I've gone over this, but it's worth going over again because
not necessary. Let me find the story. But they said that they recalibrated and came out with another 100,000 that they claim were our coronavirus deaths. So they did reconfigure something. I don't know what. I can't recall. I'll find the story.
No, all they did is look. You can Google CDC excess deaths,
right?
And you'll get the tables. The tables aren't new. The tables have been around. The ones that are showing the pandemic, they've been around since last spring,
right.
And the tables make it very clear that there are that. Normally, there aren't excess deaths. Excess deaths are very rare. On a bad flu season, you'll get a few weeks of excess deaths in the winter, usually around January or so. And that's because of a very high, an unusually high number of deaths due to influenza. That'll usually last for a couple of weeks. And if you look at the chart, they give the, you know, it gets updated every week. They give a new week. They show something like the last 3 years, 3 or 4 years And, you know, there's 52 data points for each year, you know, the weekly level. And it's based on how many people died in the U.S., period, based on death certificate. Right. And when they plot that, there's the number, and then there's kind of a line above the bars, which shows what number you have to hit to get into the excess deaths category. And they can look at that, and it's real obvious. If you take a look at it in the U.S., you can go state by state. They break mm-hmm. it down. There's a pull-down menu. You can click on any state. You can see the right. results. And you can see how many people each week died above what is expected. And those deaths started in the, you know, depends on what state, but they started in the spring. So you can go week by week and find out how many extra people died. And if you look at how many extra people died each week and you add it all up and then you compare it to how many officially died from, you know, confirmed from COVID, you see that the number of excess deaths exceeds the number of lab confirmed deaths, and that's why it's an undercount, in contrast to these nonsense posts that say that all people get counted because they get killed in a motorcycle accident or they get in a car accident or da 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 da, and they do these, you know, this example, that example, and they totally ignore the overall picture, which shows that the number, the 215 dead in the U.S. is an undercount. And you don't have to look at the U.S. You can look at any country in the world that has reliable data on how many people died. And they were showing the excess deaths back in Europe and back in Asia before it really even got going in the U.S. And you could see those patients that were dead, and you could see how many were attributed to COVID, and you could see that the COVID was an undercount. And the number who actually died because of COVID are the numbers that are listed as excess deaths, and you can go and take the total excess deaths and subtract the ones that are lab confirmed for COVID, and the difference is how many that really died from COVID but weren't in the charts because they weren't tested. So that's what the article is saying, I'm sure. I didn't see the article, but I have seen the excess tests.
Okay. I have it here. And, it's from the JAMA Network.
Yeah.
JAMANetwork.com. Excess deaths from COVID-19 and other causes March through July of 2020. So this is not exactly current. This is two months ago. All right. This is a total.
Google CDC excess deaths, and you can get the current numbers for the past 3 years. You don't have to do JAMA for taking 6 months. You can go back for the past 3 years, and you can see that all the excess deaths were then. There's a little bit of a lag because the death certificates aren't written up immediately, and they say that they go within 10 days or so, 10 or 15 days of the current before they enter them in the tables or in the chart. And the numbers that they have in the chart are not current yet because it keeps on going up. They keep adding to it. So the curves will basically dip when you get to the most recent weeks. And they're dip because they're not completed yet. So they warn that there's a lag. They don't start until 10 days after the death of the current date. So they'll go back a couple of weeks or so. And then they update it each week. And they update the numbers so that the more recent weeks, they actually get higher than they are today. So, you know, you can look at what happened 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks from now, you can look at those same weeks and they'll be higher because they're not complete. So there is complete data. There is up-to-date data. The data is broken down.
I'm sure there is. I just happened to grab the JAMA site.
Right. And the point of the JAMA site is what I just explained, is that they're showing that these are the excess deaths. These are how many people died that normally would not die, and that they died from COVID. And you can count them per each week, add them up, and see what that number is, and compare to how many died based upon the state reports. And you can see that the number that really died is higher than the ones that are lab confirmed, because people are dying without being tested, and they're not in the report. So the number of dead are higher. So it's not 215,000. It's probably 300,000. Yeah, I don't know what number they came up with, but it's probably
ballpark. Yeah, they came up with 200,000 excess deaths, but that was August 14th. So that's going back a while. And the CDC site calls it potentially excess deaths for some reason. Potentially excess deaths are calculated by subtracting the expected number of deaths from the observed number of deaths, as you said. There you go. Okay. Onward. We got other science to cover here. Let's go ahead.
There's actually quite a bit. Another is more problems with the trial that Lilly's got problems now. So they halted their trial their trial was similar to what Trump had. Those were monoclonal antibodies that Lilly has, the same type of approach that Regeneron used. They both made their own monoclonals. They're against the spike protein, and they give the patients a high level, you know, like same that Trump got, so somewhere between 2 and 8 grams of antibody, a monoclonal antibody. The Lilly trial includes remdesivir also. And they halted their trial because the patients getting the treatment were clinically not doing as well as those that received the placebo. So that's not a good situation in a clinical trial when your drug is making people sicker than the placebo. And so they've halted the trial and trying to figure out what's going on. And this is one of the concerns that was out there for treating coronavirus. And that is, it is known that with coronaviruses, that if the antibodies are not a good match for the virus, then the antibodies, instead of inhibiting the virus, they actually enhance the virus. And you end up having the virus uses the antibody to enter cells. And so they can infect more cells, and the virus can actually grow faster in the presence of a poorly matched antibody than they can without any antibody. And so that's one of the concerns. They actually haven't said that's the concern. They just said that they halted the trial, they halted enrollment, and an advisory board is looking at the data to figure out why they're getting these unusual results. And that raises a red flag, not only for the Lilly monoclonal antibodies, but if this is happening because it's not a good match, then there's concern that as the virus evolves, that the same thing may end up happening with the Regeneron monoclonal antibody. And they may work initially, but they may not work long range. And speaking of which, that is what appears to be happening with the immunity. Now, Trump's out there doing his rallies, and he's you know, lying again, flat out lying, trying to say, oh, you know, I've got immunity. And now he doesn't know that he has immunity because the immunity they measured wasn't the immunity that he generated in response to the virus. They were measuring the antibody they injected into him from Regeneron. So his doctor put out this stupid report saying, oh, we've got IgG antibodies, which was too soon to have IgG antibodies. They would have IgM before they had IgG. So they, you know, this was like the Monday after he went in the hospital. So in theory, he had only been infected for a few days. You don't right. make IgG in a few days. It takes several weeks. It takes 3 or 4 weeks before they're going to pick up the IgG. They picked up IgG because he got injected with IgG. And the assay isn't going to distinguish between the IgG they injected into the president and the IgG he made in response to the virus, although most physicians know that he's not going to have any IgG or any detectable IgG 3 or 4 days after infection or even a week or two after infection. And they're going to get IgM before they get IgG. So he put out this stupid press release saying, oh, the president's got IgG. And so he's going around and telling all of his fans who were there without masks and thinking, well, maybe if he's immune, maybe I'll be immune too. All I have to do is stand next to him. Or I can go to Florida where the governor is running through the crowd, giving them high fives. And then he takes his right hand, which he's been slapping everybody's hands, and he wipes the snot off his nose. And then he goes back.
This is Governor DeSantis you're talking about?
He's on film. Yes, it is.
Oh,
that's
my.
Exactly who it is.
Oh,
he's
my.
Running through the crowd, high fives to the crowd. And then about 5 seconds into his run, his nose is dripping.
Oh, God.
So he takes his right hand, he wipes the snot off his nose, and then he goes putting up his hand again to pass his snot around.
Well, I thought I had seen it all when I watched Creeper Joe lower his mask off his face and cough and then put it back over his face. I thought that was it. That takes DeSantis has topped that by a mile. Wow.
Yeah, by a major mile. So he's Trump's assistant in generating more herd immunity by passing the virus around and seeing how many people he can kill before he leaves the White House. Essentially, he's got the record already, but he's looking to do a personal best. See how many people, right now it's only 200,000, projected to be 400,000 by January, but he's got a shot at 1 million at the rate. The numbers are going to go up fairly quickly now that it's into the fall and people are out and about and holidays are coming up. And so, things can move fairly quickly, but, getting back to, Trump's announcement. Trump is not only making the announcements, he is in rally mode. So, he went to Florida a couple days ago. He went to Pennsylvania yesterday. Now, he went to Iowa today. Now, going to Iowa today says a lot. Okay. They didn't have Rick DeSantis with the spread the virus with them, but he didn't really need that because Iowa currently has a 21% positive rate on their testing. So the virus is exploding in Iowa. In spite of that, he's holding a rally there. I'm not sure what town it was. I don't know if
whatever.
It was in Des Moines.
He's
it might have
Iowa.
Been Des Moines.
Okay.
But whatever town he was in was rated yellow, which means crowds mm-hmm. are supposed to be at 25 people or below. Not so if they have any gatherings with more than 25 people. Trump had several thousand. And so he was in violation of all the rules and regulations, ignoring the fact that it's an 18% or 21% positive rate since Tuesday. The numbers are going up. The hospitals are starting to fill up. And this is a state that Trump won by 10 points 4 years ago. So the fact that he's in Iowa, period, says a lot. The fact that he's in Iowa holding a rally with a 21% positive rate says a lot more. And he's going to, I think, North Carolina tomorrow. I think he's got two events on Friday. I think he's talking about getting it up to three events per day. And all of these rallies are pretty similar. The people right behind Trump that are on camera are have, you know, 50-75% wearing masks. And the frequency of masks in the rest of the crowd is somewhere between 10-25%. So the vast majority are not wearing a mask. They're generally outside at, you know, wherever the plane landed, at some airport, some hangar, seating for that. And, but they're packed. I mean, they're literally shoulder to shoulder, every seat is taken. And, they're screaming and yelling unless they got the governor coming through, then they're doing high fives and screaming and yelling. And, the guy I said he's a toxic waste dump, mobile toxic waste dump. And, he's just accelerating. He's getting his numbers up so that he does one of these every day. And, that's his plan. I mean, his plan now is, to get more warriors to go into battle, because he needs to open up the country. I mean, that's part of his talk. You know, get everybody back in the schools, get everybody back to work. Time to open up America. Pence isn't talking about, I don't see any new second wave. He's not talking about, the next wave, and he doesn't see that. Trump, Pence is pretty quiet on the waving front. And Trump is still talking about turning the corner. He's talking about the turning the corner. The map today.
Well, it's a long corner, Henry. Takes time.
No, there is no corner. The corner is being turned by the virus. The virus has turned the corner and it's coming on strong. The number of states that had declining virus as of today, take a guess, out of the 50 states and the District of Columbia, 51, how many have declining virus? Approximately.
Zero.
You got it. You got it right on the button. Yeah. Zero are going down. They're all increasing, and some are going up fairly dramatically, like Iowa and Montana and North Dakota and South Dakota. And but they're all starting to go up. The numbers for today is not really quite complete, but there were, I think it was, hold on, I've got to pull it up here. I think it's something. Yeah, it's over 55,000. 55,714. Mm-hmm. With right. Another update from California still waiting. So it's going to be 57,000-58,000 today. So getting close to 60. It'll hit 60 by Friday. Yesterday it was 52,944. Monday it's always low, but it's still got over 40,000 on Monday. Monday's usually measuring Sunday's result, and this Monday was actually Columbus Day, so I don't know, some of the labs probably weren't fully staffed, and they still got 43,000 on Monday. So the numbers are going up. They'll be at 60,000 by the end of the week. They typically go down on the weekend, and then they'll start up again next Tuesday, and I would guess it'll hit 70,000 by next week, which will be getting close to the all-time high. And there's really no reason for it to be going down. It's going to continue to rise. And in 3 or 4 weeks, the death toll will start going up. There's a little bit of a lag on that front. But that's the corner that was turned. The corner that was turned was the virus turned the corner. The second wave has begun. It's going to be getting colder. The cold snap coming through right now.
The Northeast? Where's the cold,
yeah,
Henry?
Yeah,
where's the Northeast? In Pennsylvania?
It's in the Midwest right now. It's supposed to get to Pennsylvania by Thursday or Friday, tomorrow.
Now, when you
day,
say cold, I want to let's coast. Make something clear. Physical Fahrenheit temperatures don't make you sick. The idea is that cold forces people to aggregate in closed environments more. That's what happens. A lot of people think if they get chilled, they're going to get sick. That's not what happens.
Well, just to clarify, seasonal flu is called seasonal flu because it has a polymerase gene that has this one change that allows the virus to grow the polymerase to copy the genetic information at a higher rate at 33 degrees centigrade. The influenza really is an avian virus and is adapted to humans. And the normal version of this PB2-ID is optimal at 41 degrees centigrade, which is the body temperature of a bird.
Okay, that's a little higher than human. Birds 100 and something.
101? Right. It's like 101, 102. So the virus would normally replicate at its highest rate at 102 degrees Fahrenheit. And the change in the polymerase gene puts the optimal temperature at 33 degrees centigrade, which is below the normal body temperature of humans. But if it's cold outside, your nose will be a little bit lower than your body temperature because you're breathing in cold air. Your nose and throat is breathing in the outside air. And so if it's cold outside,
and you go into a crowded place,
The virus, you're right. The virus is growing faster in the cold. So when it's cold, you'll have a higher viral load, and then you'll be able to transmit that. So that is part of the reason that there's a lot more influenza in the winter. It's not just that you're chilly, it's that the virus is actually growing quicker, and therefore the viral load gets higher.
Is that just the influenza virus, or is that a coronavirus cold virus, or is that all of the above?
It's influenza. I don't know about cold. I don't think that there's that type of modification. Like I said, the influenza is really an avian virus. And that's why all the different possible serotypes have been identified in birds, but only a few have been identified in humans. I mean, the humans are just the only seasonal flu has either been H1, H2, or H3, and the N1 or N2. Those are the only combinations that have been found in humans, other than ones that jump species like H5 or H7, but those don't replicate that well, so those haven't really created a pandemic and haven't really maintained itself. All of the human cases have all been H1, H2, or H3, whereas there's like 16 different H's, and you find all 16 with 9 different N's. So you have all those different combinations in birds. You have a very limited number of combinations in humans. So that adaptation for a lower body temperature is just for influenza. The coronaviruses, the reservoirs are like bats or other mammals. And so they don't have to do that type of adaptation where the host is at a different body temperature than that it normally is found. But in any event, speaking of the coronavirus and the immunity, the statement that Trump makes is that, well, he's got immunity, which he doesn't. He hasn't had the virus long enough to know if he has immunity. And the virus that he got from Regeneron.
How will he find out? Is there a test for immunity, Henry? How is he going to know? How is anybody going to know if they actually have conferred immunity? How will they know?
They test for neutralizing antibodies. They basically draw the blood. They test the antibodies in the blood for the ability to neutralize the virus.
Is that a common test, or is that something rather unusual? I've never heard of it.
Well, it's a special version of the antibody test. The antibody test is available right now, and it says whether you've got antibodies. If you want to get more specific, you not only measure the antibody, but you measure the ability of the antibody to inhibit the growth of the virus. So that's a more involved test for the neutralizing antibody.
I guess my question, simply put, is people don't normally get tested to see if they have immunity. They just don't get sick anymore. That's pretty much how it works. People just don't get sick, so they assume they have immunity, I would guess.
Yeah, but they can test to double-check and see what they have, and they do that with the vaccine. So one of the tests to see how well the vaccine is working is after you get vaccinated, you know, a few weeks later, they test to see how much neutralizing antibody you have, and that's an indication of how well you'll do against the virus. And so that's a common lab test. They don't routinely do that with everybody, but that is how they measure how effective the vaccine was. And you're right about recurrence of the disease. And when they kind of look at how long the antibodies last, what they're finding is, in general, the antibodies are only hanging around for about 4 months. Okay? So Trump's out there saying, well, you know, I don't know how much immunity I have. He doesn't know he has any immunity because he hasn't been sick long enough. And he's got all of this neutralizing antibody in him from Regeneron. But the antibody he's got from Regeneron is only going to last for several weeks. So that antibody is going to fade away. So a month from now, they can give him a test, and he's not going to have much of the Regeneron antibody anymore. And then they'll know whether he made his own antibody and that he's got his own innate immunity. He's got immunity to the virus because of his infection. Now, the fact that he got Regeneron antibodies may have limited the amount of immunity he has from a response to the virus, because his body might not have made that much antibody because they had all this Regeneron antibody that was already attacking the virus. And so Trump could have gotten better simply because of the Regeneron monoclonals, and not because he generated a strong immune response. So it's possible he doesn't have any immunity. He's only got the immunity that he got injected into him, and he's not going to know that for about another month. So the fact that he says he's got immunity is false. I mean, he does have, you know, Regeneron's immunity from the treatment he got, but he doesn't.
And how long would that last, though? How long will that last?
That only lasts a few weeks. So that's what I'm saying. In a month from now, he can get tested. And by then, the Regeneron antibody will have faded away, And if he's got good neutralizing antibody a month from now, then that'll indicate he has immunity. The problem is that the measurement of immunity in people that have been infected is being done in, you know, research studies. And those studies are indicating that most people have only got the immunity for about 4 months. Trump's out there saying that, well, they used to think you had lifetime immunity, and that is just a lie. Nobody has ever said that that a cold virus generates lifetime immunity. And there's no reason to believe that. And that the SARS-CoV-2 is, you know, not the first cold virus around. Cold viruses have been around for a while. New ones were identified because of SARS-1 and identifying new viruses, a couple of which are found in human, mostly in children. And it's known that the immunity doesn't last that long. It doesn't last that long for MERS. It doesn't last that long for these other coronavirus cold viruses. And nobody was expecting the coronavirus to last for a long time. And that's why they've said that, you know, it's very possible the virus A isn't going away and is going to be kind of like flu that's around and it's going to keep coming back. And that if you get a vaccine, you might have to, like flu, get a vaccine almost every year to basically get ready for the next season, because the antibodies you made from the prior season will have faded. So when Trump says that, oh, they thought it was lifetime, now that I've had it, they say it's only 4 months, it's nonsense, because they don't even know he's got any antibodies. Nobody knows anything about Trump. All they know is he got Regeneron, and you can measure Regeneron. You'll detect your Regeneron if you test him now, but you don't know anything about what he's got. The reason they say 4 months is because research goes on with or without Trump. Trump's the only one that's worried only about Trump. Most of the scientific community is worried about Trump, but not about how sick he is. They're worried about Trump and how many other people he's going to make sick. That's what they're worried about.
Okay,
so
I got a question.
In a sense, contagious. Yeah.
This is important in a way. You mentioned the scientific community. Now, a lot of people listening tonight and do listen to your updates. And we have for a long time. We've been doing this since January. What are you hearing by way of response from your fellow professional scientist colleagues about the updates that we do here? What do you hear? You must get some feedback. You do a really good job. I would expect that they'll be saying some nice things. What do you hear? And how many people do you think are actually listening routinely? Because we've got each program is posted on the site. They can listen anytime they want. But that, you know.
Yeah, I haven't got that much feedback. I've got, you know, a couple politicians to kind of follow and ask questions and do follow-ups on what's been said. And so there is a little bit of a following.
I think there's a lot more following than you think. Nobody else is doing this. Those who are interested are going to be listening.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of notice some of the media stories kind of do cover some of the things that are
they
discussed.
Certainly
in
do.
The following
I have
days.
Noticed the same exact thing. Yes, they do.
And so you can kind of see some of that show up, but it isn't, you know, coming that directly. But the scientific community is you know, like I said, they're not happy with the current situation. I mean, Anthony Fauci is issuing warnings and says the U.S. isn't in a good place because, you know, there's 40,000, 50,000 cases per day. And I mean, the history of pandemics, especially like flu pandemics, because that's what all the pandemics prior to this one have been in the last 100 years. There have been like four, the 1918, 57, 68, and 2009. So, yeah, there have been four pandemics in the last 100 years. They've all been flu. And so this is the first one that isn't flu, but flu, you know, kind of follows this pattern that you know, it typically has an early version in the spring, and then it kind of fades in the summer, and then it comes back in the fall, and the fall is usually worse than in the spring. And I've used the swine flu that a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with, because it wasn't that long ago. It started in the spring of 2009, and then it was much worse in the fall of 2009. And that's what a lot of scientists, including myself, are expecting to happen with the coronavirus. So they are expecting that the fall will be worse than the spring. And it could be significantly worse in the spring.
Right.
And Fauci is raising concerns because we're starting this with 40,000 cases per day. And it's only going to go up from there. And not that that many people actually have exposure. And, you know, there are these examples of people that were infected, you know, a couple times. And the most recent one was one from, Nevada. And, the time between the two infections, I think, was something like 46 days or so. It was you know, a very short time. Mm-hmm. And the two viruses were different enough that, it wasn't that the original virus just kind of faded away and then came back again. It was, he was infected twice. And so the first infection did not give him enough immunity to avoid getting infected a second time within a month or so. And that's a little over a month. And that's the reason I've used the example of the swine flu, because I believe the same thing happened then. That initially people had a mild version of the virus. They didn't really get tested. The virus was kind of circulating under the radar. And that happened like when the schools started in the fall. And then about a month and a half, 2 months into the season, it started to get colder. And then people started to get infected with more symptoms, and then they got tested and they were positive, and then they knew there was an outbreak, and people were going to nurses' offices, being sent home from school, and the absentee rate started to go up. And I'm pretty certain that a lot of those people, when they got, you know, sicker, that wasn't the first time they were infected with the virus, that they had actually been infected, but they had a fairly mild version and they didn't have enough immunity to keep from getting infected the second time. And the second time they probably got exposed to a higher viral load, you know, because conceivably they might have been exposed for, you know, to multiple sources if they were in a environment like a school where a bunch of people had the virus and they could have been infected with a significantly higher load and then they had symptoms. And I think the same thing's going to happen with the coronavirus. So even the people that were infected in the spring aren't necessarily immune from the fall. And with the colder weather and people being inside, I think the numbers are going to go up. I mean, you can even see it in sports teams. You know, the football trying to get their season completed, and, you know, they're getting more and more teams have players with the virus, and they're postponing and rescheduling. And you're hearing golf players are coming down, and some baseball players, I think. So, in any event, you're going to hear about more and more people getting infected. It's going to be more common. It's going to be easier to get infected.
Well, there's
certainly
about 300 million Americans who have not been infected yet, and that's a lot of people.
Right, right. And it's not clear that the ones that were infected have immunity today.
Correct.
Even if they were infected as recently as the spring, which is another reason this whole idea of herd immunity. And then all of a sudden, everything's trying to get under control as soon as everybody gets infected. Mm-hmm. It's just nonsense because it doesn't last that long.
Very good.
You just have a lot of dead bodies. I mean, the dead ones won't get infected again, but,
not usually.
The rest
will. Okay.
No.
All right. Have a good night.
Okay.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night. Okay. Thanks for being here. We'll be right with you tomorrow. Good Lord, it's Thursday already. See you tomorrow on Thursday. Remember, you still have a little time to prepare. Please do so.